You all hear me okay? Can you all hear me okay? Good. Hey, I'm very happy to be here at Everyday Zen. And I gather you've been talking about Dongshan, so maybe I don't need to introduce him so much, but for those who don't know, he lived 807 to 869, and he's considered the founder of Shaodong, or Chinese Soto Zen. And I really see a very clear through line from Dongshan, and actually from Shito or Sekito before him, through the Chinese ancestors in our lineage to Hongzhe and to Dogen and to Suzuki Roshi. So there are very clear teaching and practice correlations. Tonight I'm going to talk about the Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, which is attributed to him. Just for any academics who are here, there was not any written version of this till around 1119. So some academic scholars say, well, it was concocted in the song. But this was a transmission document, as we'll see in the very first line. So oral transmission, oral tradition, especially in monasteries, was something that was very clear. So absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. So I like to think of this as coming from Dongshan himself, although he attributes this to his teacher Yunyan. So there's this continuation of this line, this school of teaching, and I think of this as the school song. So I want to talk about some bits of it. I want to talk about the two most important verses in it, and then some of the themes and maybe a few other lines. So just to start, the first verses are: the Dharma of suchness is intimately entrusted or transmitted or conveyed by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, preserve it well or keep it well. So this Dharma of suchness is very important, and I would say that throughout this long teaching song or poem, whenever it refers back, it's all referring back to suchness. So whenever there's an indefinite pronoun, it's referring back to suchness. Just to portray it in literary form is to stain it with defilement, just to portray the Dharma of suchness. So the teaching or practice of suchness is the topic or subject of this song. And so suchness, I'll say a little bit, anything I say isn't it, but suchness is just this immediate presence. The seen as the seen, the heard as the heard, or the heard as the seen and the seen as the heard, and so forth. I was studying last year a very important early Chinese Buddhist text, The Awakening of Mahayana Faith. And one of the sections in there talks about four refuges. So you all know about the three refuges: Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. But in this very important early Chinese Mahayana text, they talk about four refuges. And the first one is suchness, then Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So this reality, this presence, this experience of ourselves and all being as we face the wall, this suchness is the topic of this whole poem, the Dharma, the teaching, the reality of suchness. And the first verse says that it's intimately transmitted, I think is one of the translations I did, but it's not the word for Dharma transmission. It's not that character. It means conveyed, entrusted. But this is what all Buddhas and ancestors convey and express and share. And then it says, now you have it, keep it well or preserve it well. So in China, this was a transmission document. And I think in Japan also, I think in this, maybe it was in this early 1600s, Menzan or one of those people, one of those Soto great teachers who put it into the liturgy. So now we chant, now you have it, preserve it well. And so in some sense, it's all of us as Sangha. The question is, how do we take care of this great teaching or reality of suchness, of just this, of meeting our lives fully and meeting and including all beings and all experience? So in some ways, the topic of this poem is just how do we take care of this reality of suchness? So that's what this is about, this whole poem. So suchness is what we meet as we sit and face the wall and as we move through our life too. How do we take care of it? The second key verse in this is in the middle, the first page. It's like facing a precious mirror, form and reflection behold each other. You are not it, but in truth it is you. So Norman said that he had talked about this, but this goes back to this story of Dongshan leaving his teacher, Yunyan. And Yunyan's a very interesting character too. there's a chapter on him in my book, Just This Is It. Yunyan is a famous Zen failure, but that's a whole other story. But when Dongshan was leaving Yunyan, he asked him, if someone asks me later, what is your teaching? What is your reality? What is your Dharma? What should I say? And after a pause, Yunyan said, just this is it. And Dongshan was kind of baffled and just left, and he was going off on pilgrimage. And a little while later, he was wading across the stream, and he looked down into the stream, the running water, and saw his reflection. And realized, I am not it, it actually is me. So that's this line in this song, you are not it, but in truth it is you, is I think the one single line that most epitomizes Soto Zen. You are not it, but in truth it is you. It reminds me of a line in Genjo Koan from Dogen, of course, when you carry yourself forward to experience the myriad things, that's delusion. So that's, you are not it. But when myriad things arise and experience themselves, that's awakening. So that's, in truth, actually, it's you. So all of the wholeness of all of being arises and experiences itself. And that's what Dogen says is awakening. And that's not something out there separate from us. We are totally included in that. So in truth, it is you. Now, you may have heard this the other way. These Chinese characters have overtones, and some of them can be read in different ways, which is how you can find good translations of the same text that seem very different. So this, when Yunyan said, just this is it, this indefinite pronoun, which I was relating to suchness, also could be read as a personal pronoun. And, you know, it doesn't matter so much what Yunyan or Dongshan intended. You know, this is now up to us. So read it for ourselves. How do we read it? But I think there are two readings here. So just this person, and you could see this line, you are not it. In truth, it is you, as you are not him or her. You are not your teacher, but actually they are you. So this is really this interesting pivot. you know, I could just talk about this line the whole rest of the talk, but I won't. I'm looking forward to your comments and questions and discussion. But again, you are not it. Actually, it is you. How do we see our relationship to suchness, to everything, to reality? Starting with those two key lines, I want to now talk about some of the major themes in this whole song. And by the way, we attribute this to Dongshan, whenever it was first composed, we have the text, we have the lyrics, but of course, you know, going back to the 9th century or whenever, they didn't have a recording tape or anything. We don't have the audio, so we don't know what the melody of this song was. So I like to say to groups like this, if any of you are musicians and would like to put a melody or tune to this song, please do and send it to me. I'd love to hear it. At any rate, I think there are 5 major themes in this long teaching poem. One of them I've already referred to, just how to share suchness, reality, how to convey it, how to preserve it. And a lot of what's in this teaching poem or song is about that. How do we take care of this dharma of suchness? And this is exactly what all Buddhists and ancestors have conveyed, this dharma, this reality, this practice and teaching of suchness. So how do we take care of it? How do we share it in our everyday life? So, I like the name of Norman's song, Everyday Zen. Yeah, that's what it's about. How do we express and share this suchness in our everyday activity, in our everyday life? That's what I see as the first major theme of this song. The second one is use of language. How do we use language? How do we not be caught by language? So there are numbers of lines in this song that are about that. For example, the meaning does not reside in the words, but a pivotal moment brings it forth. And I'm going to come back to that line because that's one of the pivotal lines in the song. But the meaning is not in the words. There is a meaning, but it's not caught by the words. So one of the 6 ancestors, disciples, realized just to say the story a little bit, when he came to Huainang, he was asked, "What is this that thus comes?" Which is a very funny way of saying, "Who are you?" He didn't know what to say, and this guy Nanyue sat like an iron pole for 8 years, went back to the Zendo, and after 8 years came back to Huimeng. So, you know, these teaching stories, these koans, they seem like they're going back and forth like a tennis ball, but sometimes there's a period of time in between a question and a response. And in this case, they recorded it was 8 years. Anyway, he came back and said to Huimeng, "Now I know, now I can respond." And he said, "Anything I say misses the mark." So all of these words are just that. They're just words, but we use them. This is one of the ways, not the only way, that we can convey the teaching of suchness. Of course, it's physical too. We sit like Buddha and express in this performance art of Zazen how Buddha is for each of us. But meaning is not in the words. Later on, it also says, although it is not constructed, it is not beyond words. So this dharma of suchness is not one of those things that's put together, that's fabricated, that's constructed, but it's not beyond words. We can use words to point at something, So this is why a lot of Zen discourses is in poetry or these teaching stories that can get under our skin and into our practice body. There's also the line, Baba Wawa, baby talk, is anything said or not? In the end, it says nothing, for the words are not yet right. Well, and are the words ever right? But so it's one of the themes that recurs through this song. How do we not be caught by language, but how do we use language? And that, the next theme that is, I see as the major theme here is the principle of response. How do we find an appropriate response, as Yunnan said, to situations of our life, to our family and friends, to our Zazen body? How do we respond in Zazen? How do we respond to all of the huge difficulties of our world right now? What can we do? So this principle of response is another theme that appears in throughout this song of the Jewel Mara Samadhi. And part of it is like facing a precious mirror and form and reflection behold each other. How do we see each other, and how do we respond to the world? There's a number of lines that that refer to that. Where is it? There's a line, drumming and singing begin together. And this drumming and singing, actually the Chinese characters could be rendered as slapping or hitting and yelling come up together. Of course they do. So what is this principle of immediate response? How do we respond to our life? How do we respond to our world? How do we respond to our aching shoulders or knees or whatever in the middle of Zazen? How do we take care of this? So there is some response, and it's possible. One of the lines I want to come back to, turning away and touching are both wrong, for it is like a massive fire. So this is a problem. This dharma of suchness is like a huge blaze in the middle of our life or all around us, in this ring of fire we sit in. And turning away doesn't work. Literally, it's turning your back on it. So we can't get away from it. Since you're all here and sitting Zazen, I'm sorry, but you're stuck with this. we can't run away from our practice. But touching is also wrong. Touching could also be, that character could also be rendered as grasping or even groping. So we can't get a hold of it. You stick your hand in the fire and you know. So how do we respond? Turning away and touching are both wrong. It's like a massive fire. Oh yeah, the line I was referring to is wondrously embraced within the real, within the true, drumming and singing begin together. There's also the response of the wooden man starts to sing, the stone woman gets up dancing. Come back to that line. So this principle of response. The next major theme is the teacher-student relationship. You are not them, but they actually are you. How do we see this? And there's a lot of this song that is about how teachers and students relate to each other. I'll come back to some other lines that relate to that. And then the last of what I see as the five major themes of this is just how does energy, how does spirit arise from stillness, from silence? So if you walk into a zendo in the middle of sesshi, you see all these upright bodies just still and silent. And it seems, there was a one teacher in our lineage related to Hongzhi, whose temple was called the wooden stump or the dead stump Zendo, because they sat so still. But the point of sitting so still is that out of that energy arises. Out of that spirit arises. How do we see that and appreciate that and express that? So there are a number of lines about that. The one I just mentioned, when the wooden man starts to sing, the stone woman gets up dancing. They mutually respond. But this dynamic is in many, many key Zen lines. A dragon howls in a withered tree. Or Dogen says in his extensive record, the plum blossoms on the same withered branch as last year. So I don't know what the weather's like out there in California. Here in Chicago, it's very cold. I think it was like 9 degrees wind chill this morning, and it's been colder than that in the last month. And yet, we know spring will come. So out of the stillness and cold and silence of winter, spring will arise. And Hongzhi, a later teacher in this lineage, talks about spring arising in everything. Or somebody said to me, June is busting out all over. So how do we find vitality, life, and energy within the stillness and silence of Zazen? And, you know, this is a real question for us now, as in some places we're emerging from this pandemic. It's still not over, but I heard they're stopping the mask mandate in California. Anyway, where our Sangha here is, we lost our Sangha to COVID, our temple to COVID. We had this wonderful little storefront temple that we were in for 15 years. It was wonderful, and it was in a commercial area and right near the elevated trains. And I think maybe there's a couple people here who actually visited it. But anyway, we couldn't sit there. It was not COVID friendly. And at the end of 2020, we just had to abandon the lease and abandon it. So we're looking for a full-time long-term temple, but we're going to go back to this Lutheran church we were in for a month starting this Sunday and rent spaces for our Sunday morning and Monday evening talks. But we still have this very strong Zoom event. And, you know, I imagine some of you are not in the Bay Area. Zoom has been wonderful in some ways. I go to a weekly seminar with my teacher who I hadn't been able to attend that since I escaped California and moved to Chicago in 2007. We see interconnectedness through this pandemic, through the ways in which, you know, the whole world is caught by it. And, you know, we're not going to really be through with it until the pharmaceutical companies are willing to share their knowledge with companies in Africa and South Asia anyway, but also through Zoom. People come together from many, many, many places. So we're interconnected, and it's weird. I mean, you know, all these little boxes. But where I was going with this is that at some point, we're going to emerge from this enforced hermitage or whatever, this enforced retreat of COVID. And so how will that be? And then how will we also deal with all the other issues in the world? So anyway, that's this energy or spirit arising in everything, from stillness, from silence. This is a key dynamic in our practice. So I'm looking forward to some discussion, but I want to just go over some other key lines and talk about them. One is the meaning does not reside in the words, but a pivotal moment brings it forth. That's my current translation of that, but that pivotal moment, the character there is key, which is this very interesting character. It means, that phrase could be translated in many ways. It could be translated as the arousal of energy brings forth the meaning, or the inquiring student brings forth the meaning. It's been translated in those ways. How do we see this pivot? And that character could mean pivot. It could mean the essential meaning of the universe. It also is the character for a loom, like a loom where one weaves. So it has many meanings. Opportunity is also one of the meanings of it. So this is an interesting line. The meaning isn't in the words. The meaning is apart from the words. So in translation, one needs to translate not just the literal words, but also, what's the Dharma? What's the meaning? What is being said here? What is that pointing to? And one can do that being faithful to the literal words, but that's, challenging. So this arrival of energy, this energetic opportunity brings forth, this inquiry brings forth the meaning of this Dharma of suchness. Another key line, related to that I already mentioned, although it is not constructed, it is not beyond words. So our practice is silence, and Shakyamuni Buddha is said to be the Buddha who teaches with silence. There are other Buddhas in some of the sutras who teach in various other ways. There's one of them who teaches through fragrance, and there's one of them who teaches through flowers, and another who teaches through rain. And anyway, but Shakyamuni teaches through silence. So this Buddha that we perform in our zazen, that we express in our zazen, there's silence. But these old teaching stories, even though this is supposed to be, according to the saying, attributed long to Bodhidharma, but long after him, clearly, this is direct pointing beyond words and letters. I know of some places, some training temples in Japan where beyond words and letters is understood as you can't read anything. And there were a number of Western students there, but if they receive a magazine, it's confiscated and they're not allowed to read, period. That's kind of excessive and fundamentalist. In Suki Roshi lineage, and I would say for Dogen too, Dogen talks about this in some of his essays in Shogo Genzo. We do study the old teaching stories. We do study the sutras. We use words, but the point of all that study, the point of all those texts, the point of all these Dharma talks is just to encourage you to practice, to encourage you to go back and sit and be present as you study the self. So, some other key lines. Whether teachings and approaches are mastered or not, reality constantly flows. So we have various teachings, we have various approaches, and some Buddhist and Zen traditions or lineages emphasize particular techniques to get to somewhere else. basically, in Dongshan's lineage, you know, it's not about something else. We don't practice and sit so that in some later time in the future, then we'll understand. It's right now. It's right here. This suchness. So, whether teachings and approaches are mastered or not, reality, truth, is constantly flowing. It's all right here. We're not practicing to figure out something, or to realize something, or to have some special experience of Buddha, or some good understanding of Buddha. That's not the point. Just to be present in the middle of suchness, right here, right now. And this is a whole other Dharma talk, but right now includes all times. Right here includes all spaces. So everything is right here, and every when is right here. Reality constantly flows. That's the flowing. So that's a wonderful line. And then another one, led by inverted views, deluded beings, they take black for white. We get confused. Our perceptions and our limited human perceptions and the consciousness we have from that leads us to upside down views, inverted views. But when inverted thinking stops, it goes on, the affirming mind naturally accords. Affirming mind might be translated as accepting heart. And this isn't passive acceptance, it's the affirming mind that includes our own responses to the situations around us in our world. But we can find this accord. We can return home to Buddha. We can find the way to just to take care of friends and family and our own bodies and minds and all the suffering beings around us. How do we do that? Well, and that's another whole Dharma talk, but how do we respond to suffering of the world? In the Bodhisattva practice, that's fundamental. And part of that is Sangha, that we can't, recently my mantra is, I can't do everything. Because I get lots of requests and I can't do it all. But I do what I can. And I trust the rest of you to do the parts I can't do. So this affirming mind naturally accords. Then it says, if you want to follow in the ancient tracks, please observe the sages of the past. One on the verge of realizing the Buddha way contemplated a tree for 10 kalpas. This is actually a reference to a story in the Lotus Sutra. And there's a particular Buddha, and it's got a very long name, and I'm not going to attempt to pronounce it. But he was just right there on the edge of Anuttara Samyaksambodhi, total, complete, full awakening. But he couldn't quite get to it. He was just on the verge of fully realizing the Buddha way. But he spent 10 kalpas, 10 long ages, just contemplating a tree. So, you know, before there were zendos, before, this is a Chinese invention, before there were meditation halls in India, they got the order of monks gathered together in the rainy season and listened to sayings of the Buddha, but they didn't really have meditation halls that were, you know, like we're used to, that were the place where we mostly sit together. And it's wonderful to sit together. And it's one of the things that we miss from sitting in person together, even though Zoom has wonderful aspects. But in India, when the monks were traveling around between the rainy seasons, they would sit down and face a tree instead of facing a wall. So this ancient Buddha spent 10 kalpas contemplating a tree, facing a tree, sitting in meditation, facing this tree. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, that maybe indicates or evokes the bodhisattva way. That's a funny issue. Bodhisattvas are, you know, in some of the sutras, work through various stages to become a Buddha. In some sense, bodhisattvas are Buddhas coming back to everyday Zen, to being present in our everyday activity. So this is the bodhisattva tradition. We might consider this Buddha facing a tree for 10 kalpas. And a couple other lines I'll mention. I guess that there's small groups and then we come together for discussion. But I mentioned this line already. The wooden man starts to sing. The stone woman gets up dancing. When we emerge from stillness, when we are willing to and enjoy taking on, responding appropriately to the world, to all beings, inside and outside, there's this kind of dance that happens. The wooden man starts singing. The stone woman gets up dancing. It's there's this kind of celebration of our world and our practice and our lives that happens. And the next line is, it is not reached by feelings or consciousness. How could it involve deliberation? So this is again like it's you are not it, it actually is you, or how do you take care of it? It's not reached, we can't get to it by feelings or consciousness. Not that we should deny feelings or consciousness, but our limited human intellectual faculties, we can't figure it out, we can't understand it. That's very frustrating to us because we've been taught to understand, you know, to get good grades and proceed and, you know, build a resume or whatever, you know, to progress. We have this deep sense of progressing in our culture. But we can't get this through figuring it out. How could it involve deliberation? That doesn't mean that that we have no relationship to it. Actually, it's always here. You are not it, it actually is you. But we tend to try and want to figure it out, want to have some understanding, want to be able to write it down in outline form and put it on the wall and bow down to that. A lot of Zen, a lot of Dogen is about realizing the limitations of our human intellectual faculties. There's so many examples of that. How do we see water? Well, we see water one way. Fish see water another way. Hungry ghosts see water as pus. It's really sad. Dragons see water as palaces. So Dogen talks about this. Or he talks about when you're out in the middle of the ocean and look around, it looks like a circle, but we don't see all the details of the shoreline. So we are learning that there are different kinds of intelligence, even on this planet. Octopuses, for example, are extremely intelligent, can work with, can use their tentacles to use as to take tools, can communicate. For anybody who hasn't seen it, there's a wonderful movie, My Octopus Teacher. I think it's on Netflix. Highly recommend it, about a guy who was a deep sea diver and develops a relationship with an octopus. Sadly, they have very limited lifespans. They only live for about a year or so. If they lived longer, maybe they could do a whole lot more. But anyway, they're very intelligent. Another example is the intelligence of forests and trees. So we're learning about the mycorrhizal kind of fungus-related network underneath forests. So this has been scientifically demonstrated that different trees within a forest can warn other trees of danger, not just trees in their own species either, and can share nutrition through this network underground. So we have a very high opinion of our own human capacities, but part of Zen practice, an important part, is having some humility about what we can know and see. And yet, reality constantly flows. It actually is you. So the myriad things arise and experience themselves, and that's awakening. And we are part of that. We're part of that network. But when we think that we can control things and control nature and, you know, dig up the ground to, you know, to gain access to oil or other things that we think we should have, other countries' soil. Anyway, that becomes a problem. So trying to control anything is a problem. Of course, there's lots of things we can all control. Anyway, I'm starting to digress. So I'm gonna stop. And I'm told that there's now a breakout rooms, and I was asked to give some prompt for discussion. So I'll give two, if that's permitted. One is, how do you see yourself sharing suchness? Or you can talk about that in terms of how to respond to each other and the world from suchness. So with those as topics, Jeff, I guess you will form breakout groups, and then we'll come back and we can have a wider discussion. So thank you all very much. It's great to be here.